Well, hello, Jason. We're about to go on WTOP.
Man, I just do that the whole time. Oh, that's awesome.
Is that good?
It's very good.
Okay.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Martha Reeves of Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Martha, thanks so much for coming on WTOP.
Well, thank you for having me, Jason.
It is our pleasure to have you here. Now, you're going to be performing at Bethesda Blues and Jazz Club in Bethesda on Friday night. Tickets are still available. Check them out. We'll have them on WTOP.com. Is this your first time in Bethesda?
No.
No.
Way back when. I think Bethesda might have been on the first Motown Review itinerary. It'd be good to see it again after all these years.
What year would that have been?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 62 or 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's getting old around here.
Nah. She's still looking good. How we and sounding good. You just heard it right there. Singing WTOP's new theme song.
Yeah. No.
Have you been in the D.C. area, though, since then? I'm sure.
Yes, we played the Howard Theater when it opened again, thank God.
The reopening.
And we've been back there on several occasions. I love going there and look forward to next year. It's been every year since it opened.
Yeah? Did you the renovations, is it nice and gorgeous?
It's really different and high tech. The sound is fantastic. The room is great. We filled it up pretty good. And we get a chance to see my brother Thomas, who lives in this area.
Oh, really?
Yes, Thomas Reeves.
What part of the area?
He lives in Virginia somewhere.
Nice. Does he come up and see you sing?
Oh, yeah. He's always there. We always keep a table for him.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Is he older or younger brother?
He's older.
Oh, big bro.
He's the one a year older, and he's one of the two brothers where I won candy at church at the age of 3.
Were you what?
We won candy.
Won candy?
At church.
How'd you win candy? By singing?
We won the contest. There was a contest at church, in my grandfather's church.
Ah, where was this?
Metropolitan AME in Detroit, Michigan. Yes.
Wow.
Well, it's obvious I'm from the South, right? So I was born in Eufaula, Alabama.
Okay.
But my parents brought me to Detroit at the age of 11 months. And at 3 years old, we won candy. So I've been singing since I can remember.
That was, you were 3 years old when it happened?
Yes, we won candy.
And so you and your, take me to the scene here. You and your brothers here are in church.
Yes.
You're 3.
Yes.
So you barely remember it.
I remember it very well.
Really?
It's amazing how much I remember at the age of 3. I remember going to the Paradise Theater and seeing Lena Horne. Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Louis Jordan, Peg Leg Bates, and Eddie Lockjaw Davis. But the thrill was seeing Lena Horne.
Yeah, of course.
The rain was coming down with people with umbrellas, and she looked like the little fairy tale girl that was in our storybooks. She was so pretty. And I said, I'd love to do what she's doing. I think it sparked a love in my heart at the age of 3 to be a performer and a singer.
You think the seed was planted with Lena Horne?
Well, Mama first.
Second?
Mom taught us to sing the song that we won candy with.
What was the song?
Jesus Met the Woman at the Well.
So your mom was teaching you at home, getting you ready for the big performance?
Well, yeah, I'm the generation before TV.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times all we did was sit there and look at the radio or sing to one another. Dad played blues guitar.
Yeah.
Being a preacher's son, he only did it for our own enjoyment and our own pleasure. And that's where I learned to sing. Learned to retain lyrics. It's important to know how to remember things, poems. Poetry, I loved composition in school. It was just music. That's what I remember most about my childhood, music.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then those are your earliest memories of it, when the seed was planted, so to speak.
Yes.
When do you think was your big break?
When I sang at the Henry Ford Auditorium at my graduation, there were 3,400 people in that auditorium, and I sang Bach's aria. Abraham Silver was our teacher, God rest his soul, and he taught me the lead solo part of Bach's aria. And as I stood there in front of all those people, my knees shaking, going, hallelujah, hallelujah, I nearly fainted. But it was a good feeling when I heard the applause. And it sort of hooked me, and I knew that I was a singer. I knew that I could have a future.
You felt everything sort of falling into place at that point.
I got appreciation. People applauded. They didn't just go politely.
Yeah.
You know, it was like,
that's not a Sunday church clap with candy. This is the roar.
There you go. Yeah. And it was the first time I ever heard that. And it sort of hooked me. I wanted to hear it again and again, you know, approving the talent that God had gifted me with.
What age were you at that point?
I might have been 17.
Wow. All right. So now you're coming into your own here.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about when you hit the airwaves. First of all, the Vandellas. How was the, talk about the formation of that. What are your earliest memories of that?
I started with a group called the Delphis when one of their members left Detroit. Her family moved out, and so the Delphis were an up-and-coming group. Gloria Williamson was the lead, Rosalind Holmes, and Annette Beard, the girls that I was introduced to by a gentleman who has gone on to heaven. His name was Charles Jackson. Mm-hmm. He was in the military, and I'd met him sitting on my front porch watching him go by doing a political campaign. He played bongos, and he knew I could sing, so he referred me to these girls called the Delphis. We made one record on Checkmate Records. I think I still have my copy of that 45, but it didn't go very far. So at the age of 21, I decided, well, the group kind of broke up, and I decided to try what my Aunt Bernice had predicted. She said, you're going to be famous, so call yourself Martha LaValle. I thought that was sophisticated, and she taught me how to
spell it. Just because it had a ring to it?
Yeah, LaValle. It sounded like France or something.
There's no, but she prophesied. It doesn't come from anywhere? She just came up with that.
She prophesied while she was piercing my ears.
Oh.
That sort of hurt, so she distracted me by saying, you're going to be famous, and when you get famous, call yourself Martha LaValle.
Yeah, except for you as Martha LaValle. Ow!
Yeah. It dawned on me that she had predicted my future when I went to the 20 grand and sang with the Levi Mann Orchestra. Well, it was just three pieces, the trio, and Lefty Edwards was on drums. I gave them keys, and I sang three songs, jazz songs. We're headed for a jazz concert, so my roots started at the 20 grand in Detroit. I sang Fly Me to the Moon, Gin House Blues, and Canadian Sunset. You know, Canada is just across the water from Detroit.
Right.
And I thought Windsor was a part of Detroit before 9-1-1.
Yeah.
Because we could just ride over there or walk over the bridge and be in Canada.
Next door neighbors.
So I was singing, once I was alone, so lonely, and then you came. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was a jazz singer. And at the end of my three nights, I made $5 a night. After my three nights, I had headed back to my job at the cleaners on Monday. I had this occasion for a gentleman, good-looking man named William Stevenson, to walk up to me after I finished my last set on Sunday night. And he said, you have talent. Come to Hitsville, USA. Well, I thought I'd been discovered.
Yeah.
And I went home to my dad, and he showed me how to ride the bus from the east side to the west side. When I got there, there were about 50 people on the porch waiting in line to get inside of Hitsville, USA.
Yeah.
I saw this hand-painted sign on this house, this big house, and I started to go back home because I said, this must not be something, this might be another wild goose chase. But then the other side of my brain said, go and see.
Right.
So I went inside.
You don't know if you don't
try. It reminds me of that song, Don't Believe It, Just Watch. Anyway, I went inside.
Uptown Funk by Martha Reeves.
I went inside, and I walked past all those people because I had a cart. I was business. Oh, can I get by? Thank you. And I went to the reception area, and she said, may I help you? She had a real high voice, Juana Rochdale. I'll never forget her. And she said, may I help you? I said, yes, can I see Mr. Stevenson, William Stevenson? She said, who do you mean, Mickey? I said, if that's what you call him. So she buzzed the door, and there he was in the same suit.
Wow.
He had taken off his jacket. He had loosened his tie and rolled up his sleeves. He was writing a song for, he told me, for this drummer named Marvin Gaye, who just came from Washington, D.C., with a guy named Harvey Fuqua.
And you'd never heard of them at the time.
Oh, Marvin was a drummer on the list. I found out later there were four guys on the list. There was Benny Benjamin. There was Richard Pistol Allen. There was Ewell Jones. And the fourth guy was Marvin Gaye. He was being called for sessions, too, because he was just that good on drums.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that's him playing drums on Dancing in the Street.
Really?
That's a long story.
Oh, right.
Anyway.
I want to hear that story, though, but we'll table that for a second.
He said, what are you doing here? And I was too taken aback. I said, oh, my God, I came at the wrong time. I've done the wrong thing. I felt good all the way up until that point that I was doing the right thing. I had a card. My dad helped me ride the bus to get there.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, this is my opportunity. But here this man is that gave me the card and said I had talent. Come to Hitsville saying to me, what are you doing here? I said, you gave me this card. Don't you remember that you told me to come to this company?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, but you're supposed to call for an audition. We have an audition, auditions every third Thursday.
You just showed up.
I just showed up. So, oh, my God. So he must have needed somebody to answer the phone because it was ringing off the hook. There were four lines. One to the president's office, one to Studio A, one to the A&R department, and one to the sales department. Four lines. This is a little rotary phone I'm talking mm-hmm. about. Anyway, the digital came in the same time that I was there, but I'm marking time and making history. So he said, answer this phone. I'll be right back. Well, the man was gone 3 hours.
Man.
And I took a notepad that I had and started taking messages because there were 17 writers working out of the artist and repertoire department. I'd walked into the main heart of a record company.
Yeah.
This is where the artists report. This is where you give the musicians their assignment. And this is where they come to get paid. So that was a lot of that happening in those 3 hours. It might have been four. I don't know. That same time, after he left, about a half an hour, here comes Freddie Gorman, one of the originals, who had written Mr. Postman for the Marvelettes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He plops this great big horse saddle-looking mailbag, big leather thing on the floor and says, who's using the piano and who are you? But they weren't that nice when they asked who I was.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not going to say what they said to me. But I did answer them. I'm Martha Reeves, and Mr. Stevenson said he'd be right back. You mean Mickey? I said, yes. He said he'd be right back. Evidently, no one called him William Stevenson.
Right.
And he started playing something on the piano, and I had phone calls from people like Gladys Horton of the Marvelettes saying, there's no A&R secretary there. Who are you? Girl, I'm coming to see you. And it was a friendly conversation. And she did come all the way from Inkster, where she lived, where the Marvelettes were discovered. And it was just a day of fun, a day of happiness, until three gentlemen walked to the door. Well, two of them spoke to me, James Jameson and Benny Benjamin. They wanted their M&F and the money.
Mm-hmm.
And they were adamant. They wanted to fight somebody. Where is that M&F and Mickey?
Yeah.
Mr. Stevenson said he'd be right back. We want our money, and we're not going to cut the session across the hall. Hattie Littles was getting ready to record one of Bobby Blue Bland's songs, You're the One That I Adore. Yeah. And they weren't going to play anything until they got their $5 from the session they cut the day before. That's before the union came in.
Yeah,
but I was there when the union came in, too. Mm-hmm. However, I called the sales department, talked to a woman named Betty O'Shea. She might have been from Germany. It was a multiracial company.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a black company.
Sure.
And I talked to her, and she said, well, we don't pay until Friday, so you have to tell them they can't get paid. I wasn't about to tell them that. I put the phone directly in their hand. I said, you tell her what you just told me. So they gave her all of those what for they had given me.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, okay, put the secretary back on the phone. Then I was officially called the secretary.
There you go.
In a matter of 3 hours.
That's how you got in the
and
door.
And that's how I got in the door. It took maybe 6 months of doing demonstration records, singing back up on that song he was writing for Marvin Gaye, Stubborn Kind of Fella.
Mm-hmm.
Don Dantes were the backup singers. Jackie, Marlene, who just passed away, and Lou Vane were in Chicago cutting a record, but they were under contract to Motown. So I couldn't really expose them, so I called in Gloria, who I previously sang with, mm-hmm. Annette and Rosalind to sing backup for this Marvin Gaye project. Berry Gordy heard our harmony and said, put these girls on the back of that Stubborn Kind of Fella record you just recorded.
Mm.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
He decided we should be a group there. He gave us 15 minutes to make up a name. He was going to call us the Tillies or the Pansies or something.
And the Pansies.
Because we couldn't, you know, everybody there had a short name.
Yeah.
You know,
right. The Supremes.
Originals. The Contours.
The blank.
The Spinners. You know, the Marvelettes. So I thought about Van Dyke Street being on the east side. Every city has an east side, west side war, and it was real thick in those days because there were the Shakers and the Shakerettes, and there were Monte Cristos and their women, and they would actually cut you. The Monte Cristo people carried knives. Oh, it was a scary thing catching that bus going from the east side to the west side, but I did.
Yeah.
And I was brave. So when it was time to name the group, I thought of Della Reese. I had seen Della Reese before I went to Motown.
Mm-hmm.
But she stayed in my mind because Reverend Runless at New Liberty Baptist Church said, Della's in the house. I was visiting that church because my grandfather died. Our church went dissolved. It would be all scattered. But I was at Kelly and Elliott's church, New Liberty Baptist. And she stood up. He said, Della's in the house. He didn't call her name. This beautiful, tall woman with this first French roll I'd ever seen in somebody's hair. It was amazing to see somebody that pretty. And she stood up, she was on the front row, and he said, give us a selection. And without a minute of hesitation, she sang a cappella, Amazing Grace. And it seems like she shook the rafters, this beautiful, heavy voice. Yeah. And she sang Amazing Grace in a way that I understood it. Mm-hmm. I understood exactly what the words of that song meant. And I didn't see her again until one morning I was ironing my little blouse, trying to get to the citywide cleaners where I worked, 9 to 5. And she was on TV singing, Don't You Know I've Fallen in Love with You? Yeah. And her name was Reese. I said, God, that's really close to Reeves.
Right.
Maybe one day, if I'm lucky, I could be famous too. Uh-huh. So at that moment of trying to make up a name, I remember Della Reese. My sister's name is Delphine. We actually had sang with the Delphies. So it just came Vandella. Somehow it just came Vandella.
And the van and came
nice,
from?
It had a nice ring to it. Yeah. Van Dyke Street. East side. I want people to know that I wasn't from the west side. I was from the east side. Everybody else at the company was basically from the west side.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there it was.
There it was.
And the rest just took off.
So after we made the demonstration record with Marvin, they asked us to, well, the union man, here's the story about the union man. The union man came in and I was doing a demonstration record. They were recording a track for Mary Wells. But the union had stipulated that the musicians would now get paid union scales. Mm-hmm. No more of that $5 session mess.
Right.
And sometimes when I watch the Funk Brothers, they don't tell that part. They
right.
made real good money. They could cut 4 to 5 songs a day at Hitsville with union scale. That was a good payday.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sang the song because the union man had stipulated there should be somebody on the mic while they're recording tracks. They just couldn't cut song after song without having artists to answer to mm-hmm. and to be paid that way. The musicians could mark their payroll by who they recorded for, but they were also special musicians because they played everybody's song to fit their own personality.
Right.
My music doesn't sound like the Marvelettes. My music doesn't sound like the Temptations, the Contours, Four Tops, or the Supremes.
Yeah.
They liked me because, what, I had gotten their money. And they all knew that. They all knew that now they could get paid after they recorded a session. Because here I was writing down what song they were recording, mm-hmm. how much time it took, yeah. and what their pay should be. And their check would be written and drawn so they could go directly to the bank.
Right.
See, you can make a musician real happy, and he'll play real good for you if you pay him on time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's anybody, huh?
You talk. Somebody talks.
Anyway, that's how I got my friendship and my love for the Funk Brothers. Right there, working in the A&R department that one day. So at the end of the day, I was indispensable. They needed me there. I was keeping count of all those different women and
yeah.
and sessions and musicians, you know, writing names down that were sometimes not reported. I saw session notes written on cleaner slips and paper bags. But I started organizing things, and finally there come a session form they had printed. You know, eventually, 9 months later, after recording and getting the record out with the Delphies, mm-hmm. being called the Vandellas, Martha and the Vandellas, we went on our first Motown review. And we visited Washington, D.C. in 62.
Wow.
We played the Howard Theater. And the thrill of playing the Howard Theater is we were able to use some of the Howard University musicians.
Wow.
They were so fine.
Yeah.
They augmented our band on the first Motown review. And then we returned back several times to the Howard.
Sure.
I'm longing for some of the sandwiches. Used to walk down the street and get those mile-long sandwiches. The people that went to the Howard understands what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. those mile-long sandwiches. Anyway, I heard my first record in my I Have to Let Him Go didn't sell. Mary Wells left the company, mm-hmm. and they gave me the song, put the Delphies or the Vandellas now on the back of that song and put it out. It didn't sell very many copies. And Holland Dozier Holland heard our harmony and decided to write a song called Come and Get These Memories.
Mm-hmm.
This was after Eddie Holland had recorded, Jamie, yeah. Ooh, and it went to number one. But he decided he did not want to be on the road. He didn't like interviews. He didn't like getting up and catching airplanes. He didn't like cold, drafty dressing rooms. He didn't like anything about performing.
Yeah.
So when he asked Barry if he and his brother, younger brother Brian, and Lamont Dozier, if they could write a song, they wrote Come and Get These Memories, their first compilation.
Wow.
They don't give us very much credit for that because they had, you know, preceding that, they had 10 number one songs on the Supremes.
Sure.
But we were the first ones to sing their hits, Love Is Like a Heat Wave, A Love Like Yours Don't Come Knocking, Jimmy Mack, Come and Get These Memories being the first one to hit the charts.
Yeah.
And Ready for Lovin', and I could keep naming songs that Holland Dozier Holland wrote for us. That's how we got to be. Eventually, I met Berry Gordy. I think he came in the office maybe about my third month of being there, and I'd asked him for a salary because my dad said, look, you can't keep going to that man's company every day if you don't get on the payroll.
Right.
You're working a job. You're not just going down there singing.
Right.
Ask for a check, or you can't go back. So when I went to William Stevenson tearfully and said, my dad said, I can't come back to the studio every day. And if I don't get it, he said, okay, wait just a minute. He went and asked Barry for that's when they were putting promissory notes or memos on the back of the door.
Right.
They would put them on a little box and somebody would come by and collect them and take them. So by the time Barry got that memo, he came to the office to see, who is this girl running my A&R department? Because
right.
I was.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to finally meet Berry Gordy. And I immediately fell in love with him because all of these guys had such high regard for him. You could hear them saying, hey, man, you think Barry's going to like this song? Or, hey, Barry asked me to redub this song on the artist. Or Barry said, add some more drums. They always referred to him. He was a great taskmaster. Mm-hmm. And a wonderful place to be. It was like a beehive. Like I said, it was a house with a hand-painted sign, so very close quarters.
Right.
Uh-huh. But that's how I got there.
Wow, yeah. You mentioned Dancing in the Street and Marvin Gaye on drums.
Okay, we had an artist development department where you would go and get your instructions. I think Motown was the only company where they had people on staff to train us. It's like being in a school, and I consider myself a cum laude graduate of the Motown University. We had Professor Maxine Powell, who taught us how to be gracious. She gave us, I guess, a good mental brainwash, letting us know that the audience was the royalty, and that we were to please everyone with our appearance. We might have been the first generation to be allowed in public places after segregation, after we had the civil rights law passed. She wanted us to be presentable, to teach us how to carry ourselves, how to be ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. She had classes collectively. We didn't just have her on our own. When we got instruction, there would be the Marvelettes, the Supremes, Martha and the Vandellas, Kim Weston, maybe Carolyn Crawford. Brenda Holloway was later on, but all of us have benefited with the teachings of Professor Maxine Powell, God rest her soul. Had she lived, she would have been 100 years old in May 30th.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. We had Maurice King, who had been like a band leader for the Sweethearts of Rhythm. There was an all-girl band, 14-piece band, that he created and conducted and traveled with. And he had retired after the Sweethearts of Rhythm all dissolved. He was a music director at the Fox Theater, and he could orchestrate. Oh, he did our show at the Copacabana, and he was fantastic. He knew how to put shows together and how to teach artists harmonies and prepare us for places like the Copacabana and Atlantic City and Vegas. That was part of our teaching, and we had choreography done by a man named Charlie, Cholly Atkins, out of Las Vegas. He had trained Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Oh, yeah.
And he came to us on their recommendation, and he also brought them to Motown as well.
Nice.
But he was fantastic in teaching. That's why when you see a Motown act, there's a dance to go with the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud to say that my sister Lois worked with me, and she remembers very well working with Charlie Atkins, and she knows all of the routines that were designed just for our songs.
You said Gladys Knight and the Pips recommended the...
Yeah, Charlie Atkins. Yes. He had worked with them. You know, Gladys started singing at the age of 8. And I remember her being on Ted Mack's Amateur Hour with the gold cigarette dancing cigarette pack. She was 8 years old when I saw her. Sweet and cute, Well, she's been singing all that time and had hit records, and Charlie had choreographed. And Gladys and the Pips were known for their beautiful dancing.
Yeah.
So we got their instructor.
Nice.
In our house.
Nice. Awesome.
Yes.
And then Dancing in the Street with Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye, I was in the studio recording, and I'd finished my 6 hours. Because you had 2 hours with Maurice King, 2 hours with Professor Maxine Powell, and 2 hours with Charlie Atkins. And Marvin was recording. And he was so fine. I would follow him anywhere. I didn't care that he was married to Berry Gordy's sister. I was in love with him like an artist. He was so fine, but he's so talented. He would sometimes record all by himself. He'd play the drums and he'd play the organ. Then he'd put melodicas and things on his music, and he'd sing all the leads on some of them. And he was just so creative. He was always writing. And so I was standing there, and he'd say, "Calling out around the world, are you ready for a brand new beat, baby?" to this track that he had created. And I was standing there going, wow.
He wrote that?
Yes, he did.
Oh, wow.
And he sang it.
And you heard it. Happened to hear him singing it.
I heard him sing it. And he looked over and saw me and said, "Hey, Ivy," who was the co-writer, "and Mickey, try this song on Martha." I'm going, wow, he knows I'm in the room. And I learned the song practically by listening to him sing it.
Right.
So I couldn't have sang it the way he was singing it. It was more romantic, and it was like to a girl, not right. necessarily to the world. I said, I remembered being a child and on my street in Ryapel in Detroit, houses very close together, cobblestone streets. A little guy named J.D. got ran over by a car. So our parents, my dad being working for the city of Detroit, it was for the water board, and Mr. Elliott, Kelleen's father, who lived across the street, was a bus driver, DSNR is what they used to call it. They decided to ask the police permission to put the horses and the yellow tape and let us block off the street and dance. We didn't have a recreation hall. We didn't have American Idol. We didn't have nothing like that.
Yeah.
We had to dance with each other, and they had record players, not loud woofers and tweeters, but record players that they would put on their porches, play their favorite music, and we'd dance in the street, eat everybody's cooking. I remember one time they killed a goat, and that was the most horrible thing I've ever witnessed. They hung that thing upside down, cut his throat. I went, oh, God.
Stuck with you forever.
And then they barbecued it, and the whole neighborhood ate that goat. I said, I don't know.
Uh-uh. You were just dancing in the street.
Well, we danced in the street on a regular basis. So when I got a chance to sing that song, I remembered being in New Orleans at Carnival time. And it's a joy when everybody is listening to the music and just dancing and having a real good time. Mm-hmm. So I thought about that. Then I went calling out around the world. And it became mine. I sang it all the way through. And I looked up in the picture window, and they were congratulating each other and saying, "Hey, man, we got a hit. She sang that song." And Lawrence Horn, the engineer, looked up and said, "Hey, man, the machine wasn't on."
Oh.
So they asked me, "Martha, can you do it again?"
So the initial one doesn't exist anymore. You can't hear it anymore.
I can't hear it. I can't hear the one Marvin sang.
Oh.
But they said, "Can you do it again?" So the second time I did it, that's the reason it sounds like a live recording.
Right.
Because I nailed it the second time with a little bit of a temper.
Yeah.
They didn't have that machine. I nailed that song. Sing it again. Okay. And so I gave it some extra.
I gave it a little extra, yeah.
Yeah. And it's all because of those trumpets.
Mm-hmm.
The trumpets reminded me of the bullfight. Yeah. And when we find great trumpet players that can play that line, that same excitement happens.
Yeah.
Time and time again. I love singing that song.
What was Marvin's face when he saw you sing it?
Marvin was always romantic looking.
Yeah.
He didn't have big eyes. He almost looked like he was just romantic looking.
Yeah.
Anybody ever seen him or know what I'm saying? He had romantic eyes. He didn't change.
He's Marvin freaking Gaye.
I saw a smile.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a lovely smile too.
Like this thing I wrote is getting the treatment it deserves.
This
right
is
now.
What we want. Yeah. This is she gave us what we wanted.
That is great.
Uh huh.
Were you?
But it was a wonderful day, and it only took like about half an hour, and then on to the next song.
Yeah.
Because it was like a beehive. It was always a song being recorded.
So what was it like, you know, you sing this thing, you see Marvin giving a little smile, and then, you know, here you are, this, you know, three-year-old, in your own mind, you remember three-year-old singing for candy in church, and all of a sudden, this song just takes off.
Yeah.
What's that? Were you just surprised, floored?
It was wonderful. People stopped school classes and went to the campuses and on the football fields, and gave big celebrations with that song. I've been in nearly every big state where they've blocked the streets off in the 60s because of dancing in the street.
Wow.
We've had some great celebrations.
Yeah.
Halloween. Oh, anytime. I asked stories about what were you doing when the song came out, because we had our 100th anniversary last year, and some babies told me that they were at a pajama party, and they heard Dancing in the Street, so they ran out in the driveway in their pajamas, and the house mother came out and said, "Get yourselves back in here." But they, in their pajamas and their negligees, and went on, yeah, in the driveway and danced in the street. Some wonderful stories, how people were riding in their cars, and they pulled the cars over. And some states actually changed the law that you could actually block the streets off and dance in the street.
Because, yeah, of your song?
Because of Marvin Gaye's song that he gave to me.
I love that you continue, you know, you humbly credit him with that. Oh. That's great.
What a great artist.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, what I know, that's the big one that literally had people dancing in the street. Mm-hmm. My personal thing, I love Nowhere to Run. That just gets me going. How'd that one come about?
I was at home ill with the flu, and Holland Dozier Holland again called me and said, "Come to the studio. We want you to cut this song." The track was already done. And, you know, it's ironic. The company was a family company, to the point where Ivy Hunter, who was part writer of Dancing in the Street, was singing backup with Rosalind and Betty on Nowhere to Run. So when you listen to it again, you hear this man in the back. Mm-hmm. When I think about present time, Nowhere to Run, Robin Williams, Blessed Our Heart, and Good Morning Vietnam.
That's what I think. It's the first one he plays right after.
And, yep, and the helicopter goes off. And yep, I always try to take people to that moment, how I felt when my son had taken me to the theater and set me on the front row and said, "Mama, don't jump up, because he knows I'm silly," right?
Yeah.
And excitable. And he said, I said, what, baby? He didn't tell me why we were in the theater. He somehow managed to get me on the front row.
Wow.
So when Robin Williams said, "And now we're going to play Nowhere to Run with Martha and the Vandellas," I jumped up. I did. And he grabbed me by my clothes and pulled me back in the seat and said, "Come on, Mama." But I was surprised
to see. That kicks off
the
movie.
I was surprised to see Nowhere to Run and Good Morning Vietnam and to hear Robin Williams, yeah, call my name. It was just exciting when we did our PBS special for our president, Barack Obama, and he called my name during that taping.
Oh, wow.
I've had some exciting moments.
In what context? Do you remember what he said?
Yeah, he said a special thanks to Martha Reeves, because they closed the show with Dancing in the Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
They didn't let me sing it, though.
Oh.
They just let me sing on the end of it.
Well, it was still
when he called my name, it was all good.
Still a big honor, yeah. Did you ever speak with Robin Williams after that? No?
No.
Just seeing it in the theater?
No. We went to San Francisco, and we had a tea party, and he was in the it was his neighborhood, and the proprietor of this tea house spoke very fondly of him, but I never in my lifetime got a chance to speak with him. Just like I never got a chance to see Van Morrison, because we did Wild Night on MCA. I'd like to meet Van Morrison.
Yeah.
And there's a few other people I haven't met that I'd like to meet.
Yeah.
I met Mick Jagger way back in
62. He covered Dancing, didn't the Stones cover?
Yeah, him and Dave Bowie. Yeah, I'm mad at them.
What was it like hearing Jagger singing your song?
I think
singing Marvin's song.
I think they did a wonderful job. They raised so much money for AIDS, live AIDS.
Yeah.
But when they did the video, you see, I never had a video.
Right.
And I had a flower dress. I know I dance better than them. They didn't ask me to do the video with them. I'm very upset with them.
Well, we're going to have to reach out to them and give them a piece of their mind.
I want to meet the
mind,
queen, too. I've been going to England since 1962. I want to meet the queen. I want to see her, sing for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you deserve it.
Mrs. Powell promised us. She said, you're going to sing for kings and queens, lords and ladies. Well, I made the lords and ladies.
Yeah. Where's the kings and queens?
Yeah, hey.
Well, before we get to that, by Bethesda.
Other Motown acts have gone and played for the Royals, so maybe I'll get a turn.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What can we expect at Bethesda Blues and Jazz Club?
I'm looking for all my friends. I'm looking for all of those that love the Motown sound. I'm looking for all of those who know that I aspire to be a jazz singer. We'll be doing a little jazz for them, too. I've recorded some jazz, gospel. Yeah. We'll do the variety of songs that we've recorded.
Yeah.
And I expect it to be wonderful, because I've got players that I've played with before here in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like a reunion with the band members. and fun with the audiences.
Will your brother be there?
No.
No, not this time?
Not this time.
It's okay. Can't get it every time.
Well, he doesn't travel with me on a regular basis. Anywhere in New Michigan, I can get him.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Talking about Benny Reeves.
Yeah?
The one that sings. Now, Thomas will be there. Yes, he will.
Oh, yeah, the one from
yes,
Virginia.
Yes, we spoke to him earlier.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one. Oh, yeah, Thomas. Yes. Oh, we know Thomas now. What can we expect to hear? Is it going to be the hits?
It's going to be all the hits. In fact, I don't sing anything unless I've recorded it.
Yeah. So no covers.
We might do a tribute to Marvin Gaye. I didn't record that, but people will understand why. Anytime I'm in the Washington, D.C. area in Maryland, they love Marvin so much because this is his home.
Of course.
And we give tribute to him.
Yeah.
I had the occasion when we first started singing backup for him. We do it from the wings, of course, we visited his house, met his parents, and ate at his table. So we made friends here in D.C.
Do you find that fans in D.C. fans, that do they know the little tidbit that he wrote the song?
Some people have to be reminded because they didn't ever say. But
right.
if they look on the label of their 45, I'm not talking about a gun, I'm talking about a 45 record.
Mm-hmm.
They'll see that Gay is on there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Stevenson and Hunter.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. How about recording wise? Do you have any working on any albums coming up?
Oh, I'm working on so many things. There's a Cinderella package maybe for Christmas.
Cinderella?
A bunch of divas are going to get together, and I'm going to be one of them.
Really?
Making a Christmas album, yeah.
Do you know what you...
My first solo album that I produced on my own, I had my own label release, Home to You.
Mm-hmm.
We sing a couple of songs from it in the show.
Nice.
I'm working on a gospel Christmas album. I'm in the studio all the time.
Absolutely.
The latest thing to make the charts, however, was with Crystal Method. We did a regeneration documentary with Crystal Method.
Okay.
I had been called on the mat because I was saying I didn't like synthesized music, and they showed me how synthesized music and live musicians could combine and make a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And I'm Not Leaving, I think it's one of the finest pieces of music ever made. It did get to the dance charts. Was number 26.
Nice.
So, experimenting.
That's awesome.
And we also did the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's online. You can catch it if you go to Jimmy Kimmel Show, Crystal Method, Martha Reeves. You'll see we did a bang-up job with Lewis Price singing second lead.
Always busy. Always working on stuff. Well, we'll look for the Christmas album, too.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that.
All right.
But first of all, you got to check her out at Bethesda Blues and Jazz Club. Friday night, tickets still available. Martha Reeves, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for sharing all your stories, from the goat to the dancing in the streets to Marvin Gaye's little smile, everything.
And Isaac Daniels is my music director in Bethesda, and he's a teacher in the Duke Ellington Academy here. So I've got one of your teachers as my band leader. He's getting the band together for me. He plays a beautiful guitar. We're going to have a good time with him.
Awesome. Yes. Well, anything else you want to say before we go?
Thank you so much.
Yeah. No, thank you. Pleasure's
Jason,
all ours.
Wish I could stay with you a little longer, but we're on our way.
Yeah, let's get you on the road to Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming on WTOP.
God bless your heart.
That's Martha Reeves on WTOP.
WTOP.